Gather round. The witching hour draws near. I'm your haunted host, animation industry artist, witch, and overall spooky enthusiast, Jenny Calabro. Come with me as we venture into the spooky realm of entertainment and real-life ghosties in this episode of A Jaunty Haunt. Now is the time. This is the hour. Ours is the magic. Ours is the power. Welcome back, spooks and specters, to the Halloween episode of A Jaunty Haunt. And like I said in the last episode, it's A Jaunty Haunt's birthday. Yay! 1 year! Thank you all so much for sticking around and listening. Whether you're new or you've been here since the beginning, I sincerely appreciate it. To celebrate A Jaunty Haunt's spooky birthday, I am giving a discount on my witchy website. Through my witchy website, you can get tarot readings, mini palmistry reading, tea leaf readings, witch consultations, sigil magic art commissions, dream interpretations, all that fun stuff can be found on my website, eidolonskingdom.bigcartel.com. That's E-I-D-O-L-O-N-S. KINGDOM.bigcartel.com, which you can find that information in the episode description. So if you use the code AJAUNTYHAUNT, all one word, no caps, you can get a discount on your order if you're interested in that kind of witchy fun magic. Speaking of witchy fun magic, happy Samhain to all my witches, and what better time to talk about the craft. Yes, if you are a fan of the craft, you were able to tell from my little opening in the beginning that we are going to be talking about the craft. And if not, you could tell by the title of this episode. I'm going to be talking to returning guest Josh McKenzie, great friend of mine who is also a fellow podcaster and has just amazing opinions about films, in my opinion. The Craft came out in 1996 and stars Fairuza Balk, Robin Tunney, Neve Campbell, and Rachel True. I hope you all enjoy this magical episode of A Jaunty Haunt. Welcome back, spooks and specters, to yet another episode of A Jaunty Haunt. This time, we're getting into some witchy magic, and you know I am all about the witchy magic. But before we get too far into it, let's meet our guest, who you may already know.
Hi, I am Josh McKenzie. Very happy to be back. I am a storyboard artist at Nickelodeon currently, and I love this movie.
I love this movie too, and I love that you're joining us again to talk about this movie. I'm so excited. As you can see, lovely viewers, by the title of this episode, we are talking about The Craft, the absolute witchiest, fabulous, magical film. I love this movie so much, as I've already said. But before we dive into the story too much, for anybody who hasn't seen it, first of all, go watch it. What's wrong? Why haven't you seen it yet? Please. Treat yourself, I promise. It's very good. Or if you haven't seen it in a while, let me give you a quick rundown of what happens in this movie. So the movie starts off, we see some girls practicing some magical ritual. It's very mystical, but there's only three of them. Then we cut to this girl named Sarah. She's just arriving in LA. She's a new girl. She goes to her Catholic school, and she is definitely the odd person out because she's the new girl. In class, she's sitting and kind of zoning out, and one of these girls from the opening is staring at her. Sarah is doing this like magic with a pencil. It's floating or spinning all on its own, and Bonnie rushes to go talk to Nancy and Rochelle, and she informs them that they have their, quote, fourth, which is supposedly Sarah. But when Sarah tries to talk to them, they're kind of off-putting. She walks away. At lunch, this guy named Chris approaches Sarah and is obviously flirting with her and warns her to stay away from the three other girls, saying everybody knows they're witches. So he invites her to watch his football game. She goes. He's making a total jerk of himself on the field. And the other three girls approach Sarah and convince her to go with them to go get coffee, but they actually go to a magical witchy shop in which the three girls are pickpocketing and just stealing everything they can, except for Sarah, who pays for her book. She does the right thing. And as they're leaving, they kind of get hassled. Sarah specifically gets hassled by a homeless man, and she gets terrified of him, runs across the street. The guy gets run over. The girls freak out. They're like, oh my gosh, we did it together. You're our fourth. It really freaks Sarah out. She decides, I don't want anything to do with these three crazy girls. So it kind of cuts forward to her at a party, Sarah at a party, where she's with Chris and they're making out, and Chris tries to convince Sarah to go home with him, and she's really uncomfortable, says she's just not ready for that, it's too soon. And he seems fine with it until the next day she goes to school and everybody is glaring at her and snickering. And Nancy, Rochelle, and Bonnie approach her and they inform her, hey, this guy is going around school saying you're a terrible lay and that he slept with you and that you were just the worst. So Sarah goes to Chris and confronts him, and he treats her like absolute garbage in front of all of his guy friends. She's devastated. And so the three girls say, like, hey, you should come with us. We're going to go have fun. We're going to go do magic witchy things. And they go do that. They form a nice little coven out in the woods. They dedicate themselves to each other. It's beautiful. A magical montage ensues. And during this magical witchy wood gathering, they make these wishes. Rochelle, who has to deal with a terrible racist white girl at school, makes the wish that she wishes to have the ability to not hate others who hate her, specifically Laura, the racist girl at school. Sarah wishes to love herself more and to be loved more by others, specifically naming Chris. She wants him to love her. Bonnie wishes for the power to be beautiful outside and in because she is scarred up. Nancy wishes for all of the power of Manon, who is kind of like their deity figure. Soon their wishes come true, but they all have a price to pay. And as the movie continues forward, the price that they pay gets way out of hand, way more intense. And some of the girls kind of become power obsessed to the point that Nancy decides it's a good idea to invoke the god deity spirit that they have. And she goes absolutely crazy with power. In the meantime, Chris gets so obsessed with Sarah, the main girl, that he tries to rape her. When Sarah tells the other girls this, Nancy decides she's going to take matters into her own hand. She goes to a party where Chris is at, glamors herself to look like the other girl. And when Sarah comes in and tries to tell Nancy to stop, Nancy gets upset. Chris flies out the window due to her angry powers. He dies. Sarah's upset and decides, I'm going to stop Nancy from doing any more harm to anybody. But Nancy finds out because she's just too powerful. Her and the other girls, Nancy, Rochelle, and Bonnie, decide they're going to harass the hell out of Sarah because you're not supposed to mess with your coven sisters. Sarah kind of starts to what seems like go crazy in her home. She's thinking she's seeing bugs and snakes and spiders and that her parents are dead. And the three girls show up to literally kill her. And as she's dying, she's also takes in the spirit of Manon, and she's able to fight back the girls. She scares Rochelle and Bonnie away. She literally has a fight with Nancy before binding her, actually binding her this time, to the point that Nancy ends up in a mental institution bound, and Rochelle and Bonnie end up with no powers at all. And it's revealed that Sarah still has that bad witch energy, and she is not going to let anybody stop her. And that was a very lengthy plot summary, but I just had to get it all out there. So now that we've gone over that, Josh, I picked you specifically for this. Usually I ask people why they picked this, but I was like, I got to talk to Josh about this because I know you have a deep appreciation for this movie like I do. I know you appreciate storytelling, especially visual storytelling, which I think this movie does a wonderful job of. But I want to know, when was the first time you remember seeing this film and how did you first initially feel about it?
Well, from the start, I loved it. I remember I didn't see it until college. I think I was probably 21, so I hadn't even heard of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, until I was like in my early 20s. And it was sold to me as like Mean Girls with magic. And it's kind of that, but it's, I think it's very much, you know, it's completely own animal there. But I was absolutely smitten with it from the start. Yeah, I think this movie's electric. I'm particularly fond of the beginning, middle of this movie, sort of like the montage part where they sort of form the coven And when they're kind of like constantly doing sleepovers, like I love the scene where they do the glamours for the first time. I love the light as a feather, stiff as a board moment. I just really think that Robin Tunney and Fairuza Balk and Neve Campbell and Rachel True have such like a chemistry to them that I really love watching them just be friends. And maybe we can talk more about that later. But like, I think this movie is especially successful, you know, when it's about the four of them as like a friend unit. I feel like I could watch an entire multi-season TV show about that.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. And it's funny that you say that, because now that you've said that, I'm like, I could totally see the craft being made into a TV show where it's more episodic and you really slowly build into their growing relationship and then the fall from grace of the whole coven. Like, that would be really cool too, because the movie does a great job of it, but like, ooh, let me simmer in that.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that kind of brings me to like, if I had like maybe like one complaint about this movie, I don't like love the end. It feels very sudden to me, you know, because we have the magical showdown between Sarah and Nancy. And, you know, then there's, you know, this cut through time where it's revealed that Sarah's parents aren't dead and everything's fine. They appear to be moving. They don't really say, but they're like loading things into a truck. And then that's when Rochelle and Bonnie come to see if Sarah still has any powers. It all feels like a little abrupt to me. And then we cut. And of course, Nancy's in the asylum, like you said. I feel like I wanted more there. Just to kind of like a little bit of a longer epilogue. And I mean, to your point about a TV series, I think we really could have got that nuance with the end of the movie.
Absolutely. And it's funny because upon doing research for this, like with everything that I do on this podcast, I just learned so much interesting information that I had no idea about before. And since we're on the topic of the ending, apparently the ending was completely different from the one that we got in the film originally.
Oh, really?
Yes. So it's really interesting because there, I could only find like two or three deleted scenes that were actually filmed. And then the script I found through an interview with someone who helped out on the film, which we'll talk about later. But through this interview with this person, they had mentioned that in the original ending, what's supposed to happen is as Nancy starts to go mad with power, sort of like at the beginning of the film where they are just starting to get into things and Nancy kind of accuses Sarah of trying to convince the other two girls, Rochelle and Bonnie, to be on her side during the stoplight scene. That's supposed to happen kind of again with emphasis later where Sarah is talking one-on-one to Bonnie and Rochelle, trying to convince them to do a binding spell on Nancy, where Nancy comes in and discovers what's going on, and Nancy snaps back at the two girls and tells Sarah, like, what you're doing here, like, you could have been killed for this back in the day. And that's when Bonnie and Rochelle side with Nancy. And then as the movie goes on, in the original script, what's supposed to happen is Rochelle and Bonnie decide that they agree with Sarah, that Nancy has gone way too far, taken things way out of hand, and that she needs to be stopped. So instead of Nancy, Rochelle, and Bonnie going against Sarah, it's kind of the opposite. It's Bonnie, Rochelle, and Sarah going against Nancy, who's gone just crazy with power. And Nancy actually dies in the original script.
Oh.
Yeah, she gets impaled on like a clothes rack or like a hanger of some sort. It's not really specific, but this person, Pat Devon, they are a witch who was brought on as a consultant, and so their whole job was to give feedback on the portrayal of witchcraft in the movie, which we'll talk about in a bit. But they actually suggested an alternate ending to what they had originally written with Nancy's death. Quote, Nancy, who had been abused, neglected, molested, and finally driven mad by attempting more than she was prepared for, was not intrinsically evil and did not deserve to die. Andy had agreed and changed that. Andy being director Andrew Fleming. So I am so glad that even though this is a witch consultant who was supposed to specifically be speaking out about how witches were portrayed, stepped in and be like, sorry, I don't think you can take the victim here. And yeah, they're a villain, but you can't kill them because they're also a victim. You need to like show them like taking her power back against Nancy and saying, no, you can't do this. And I'm like, I am so glad that Nancy didn't, because that would have been kind of a crappy way to end things, because she had the worst backstory out of all of them. And then to just like kind of be like, oh, well, now she's dead because she was evil. It's like, oh, that's not fair either.
Right. Well, I mean, to your point, when I was kind of struck by that while watching it this time, her like just being insane now also kind of feels a little severe.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess they killed a guy. So, so I mean, I guess, so like, I mean, I guess there is consequences in this movie, but like, I don't know. Like, it just feels really, just feels like a really severe punishment. Cause I mean, like you're saying, like Nancy's not evil. Like she is like, you know, she's perhaps power hungry. She's ambitious. She wants to rise out of like her station, and like kind of the shitty hand that she was dealt in life, which isn't in and of itself a crime. So to me, even like the fact that her like brain is scrambled at the end feels a little severe. But again, I guess they do kill a guy, so no.
And she does attempt to kill Sarah too, so it's right. Like, well, she was at the point where she completely lacked empathy at all, so it makes sense. It's definitely intense. And it's interesting because the actress who plays Nancy Ferrusa actually says that Nancy's use of magic is almost like a form of addiction. And I thought that was really interesting, that kind of parallel to here she comes from this powerless scenario where she literally has no power over any aspect of her life, not at school, not at home, nothing. And that's why you can tell she enjoys dominating the other two girls in the group and being the leader. And it makes sense why she all of a sudden goes wild with all this power that she now has, this newfound ability.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think that's why, I mean, like, I'm not sure if you agree, but for me, like, Fairuza Balk is just like the sun that this movie orbits around. Like, she's just electric to watch.
Absolutely.
I was tweeting, as I frequently do, about the movie after I finished it. And it's like, Fairuza Balk as Nancy in this movie feels like one of those like destined roles to me, like who else but Sigourney Weaver could have been Ripley in Alien?
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing, like just a person who was just the ideal vision for this role. I feel like nobody else could have done Nancy. You know, she's Fairuza Balk really brings this like kind of empathy to this character who does want to escape her circumstances, right? So like even when she's doing... even when she's kind of going mad with power, I'm still kind of like rooting for her a little bit, you know, up until like she tries to, you know, kill Sarah, I suppose. But like you kind of cheer for her, like when they kind of inadvertently kill her like stepfather, and they get their apartment, which I made a note about that maybe we can talk about later. But you know, you just want her to kind of be okay. So like you were like, all right, we'll have a little more power. You know, this is, you're just putting like another serving on her plate because you just want her to be okay. And I think, you know, Balk's performance really stops that Nancy character from becoming like a flat villain. Like she's really not.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I mean, I was rooting for her the whole film until the turning point where, you know, even after that really upsetting scene where Chris tries to rape Sarah and Sarah literally runs away to Rochelle's house and then all the girls are there. When Nancy goes to the party to mess with Chris, at that point, I was still like, yeah, he deserves whatever's coming to him. Whatever Nancy's going to serve him, he's got to eat it. Because he, first of all, even if he was put under a spell to fall in love with Sarah and then became obsessive, he was never a good person, especially at the beginning of the film. We see that plain as day. He was always a bad person. So I was just like, let him have it, Nancy. Go, girl. Yeah. You do what you gotta do.
I mean, if I'm being totally honest, I don't really care that she killed him. Like, like I'm going to stop pretending like I really care that that character died. Like, he's not.
Yeah, no, right, exactly. But it's at the part where she's like screaming at him that, that's the first moment when I first saw it where I was like, whoa, okay, hold on. This is intense. She seems like she's going a little crazy here. Like, what's going on? And then when she kind of intimidates Sarah in the bathroom with the other girls because she knows that Sarah did a binding spell on her, she goes from this character that I'm rooting for to, like, I am terrified of her now. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, like, she's really, really scary. Like, that's not someone you want to mess with. You don't even want to look at her the wrong way. Whereas at the beginning of the film, anybody who looked at her wrong, she would just kind of like roll her eyes, stick out her tongue, be like, yeah, what about it? Screw you. But now it's like, oh no, now she's going to like murder anybody who looks at her.
Well, I mean, to your point, like, you know, Balk really like builds that energy in such like kind of like a subtle way. Because like she really, you know, at the start of the film, she's very surly, like she's actively mean to Sarah. But she does still kind of have sort of that, just sort of that like energy about her. And she, and you know, Balk really builds it scene by scene, just kind of like adding like another Jenga block to that tower. And yeah, just like you're saying, in the scene where she, you know, pushes Chris out the window, it's like, yeah, it's like the Jenga tower falling over. That's she has that great moment where she's like shaking her head, and I can't remember what she's saying, but she,
oh, he's sorry. Yes, oh, he's yes. Sorry. Yeah.
And it's great. It's this like crescendo of all of this Nancy that we've seen up until that point. And it's just like, yeah, it's like musical. It's amazing.
I'm like chef kissing here. You can't see me, Josh, or listener, but you're just hitting the nail on the head. This is why I invited you to talk about this episode. I'm like, thank you. You get it. Yes. Now, you had mentioned what you thought was one of the weakest parts of the film. For me, I got to talk about what I think is the weakest part, because we're kind of talking about it. It's the fact that, first of all, Chris completely ruins Sarah's image, and her response is, I want him to love me, which isn't great. And it's like, okay, maybe whatever, she's got a crush on him, she can't deal. All right. But then he becomes absolutely obsessed with her to the point that he is trying to rape her, and he dies. And what she tells her father the day after his death is, she tells him, you know, I really liked him, you know, deep down inside, he was a good guy. And I was like, excuse me?
Yeah.
Where did you get that? He has never been a good person. And if anything, your spell just, you know, opened the floodgates to prove he was never a good person. Because, yeah, okay, sure. You did the love spell, which is a big no-no in, you know, Wiccan belief, depending. We'll get into that. But still, like, this dude was never a good guy. You hate him from, like, the first time he shows up in the movie, you don't like him, like, as a viewer. And yet Sarah is still, like, giving him a pass. And I just, that was the one part of the entire film that was not believable. It wasn't the snakes from the fingers and the bugs in the mouth with Nancy screaming. Mm-hmm. No, it was the part where Sarah was giving Chris a pass. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, I have written here in my notes in all caps, she actually goes to watch football practice. Like, because, like, yeah, you know, after they first meet, he's like, well, you can come, you know, he's very smarmy about it. He's like, you can come watch me do football practice, which is the most boring thing in the world to watch. and she does the rational thing and is like, why would I do that? But then she goes to do it.
And
everything you're saying is, so true. Like, this watch in particular, I think this maybe is the fifth or sixth time I've seen this movie. This time I was really paying attention to just completely, they just forget to make Chris likable, like, at all. They forget to, like, give any reason for Sarah to like him. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. She just keeps being like her, like, wish to Manon, like, originally was like, I want Chris to like me. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
when he keeps becoming more and more, I guess, sort of driven insane by magic, it's just like, that you should have made us care, I guess. Like, culminating to the point where I care so little that when Nancy does kill him, I'm like, well, at least that plot line's over. I just don't want
to. You're like, oh, good. He's gone off screen. Thank God.
Well, right. And I'm just like, I totally agree. I do wish they'd given, I guess, Sarah more of a reason to like him. And then it just makes sense that she would no longer like him after he assaults her, but it's very strange.
Yeah, it is very strange. I would understand it more if she was, you know, crying and upset because, you know, Nancy took it too far. She didn't have to be talking to her dad. She could have just been talking to one of the other girls, or even herself being like, this wasn't right. Nancy went too far. This wasn't right. Because then it's less that she's crying over Chris's death as like, I still loved him, and more like, hey, killing somebody maybe wasn't the answer.
Right. Well, I mean, because you can kind of see her guilt a little bit, because I think the witch who owns the shop kind of advises against a love spell, if I remember correctly. I mean, it's sort of interesting because like this movie's all about the you know, the consequences of the magic and like what comes back to you if you use magic for your selfish purposes. So like, I mean, of course, if the love spell goes out of control, that's sort of interesting just as like an idea. But yeah, it just completely, I would agree. It's also another weakness of the film. There's nothing to like about that whole plot line.
Absolutely. Whereas the strongest part of the whole film, in my opinion, is the witchcraft elements, even though it does get very Hollywood at the end and throughout most of the film with the levitation and changing one's entire head to look like somebody else's and all of that. The way that they handled witchcraft in this film was very well done, to the point that when I saw it when I was a teenager, I absolutely adored it. But then when I watched it again, I would say just a couple years ago, when I was like already deeply ingrained in the witchcraft community and have studied, you know, all different forms of witchcraft, rewatching this film and just having my mind absolutely blown, being like, wow, they get it. They really do. So I wanted to talk real quick about this. So first of all, I identify as a witch. I don't have a lot of labels that I like to put on myself, but Wicca and witch, those aren't the same thing. And I just want to clarify this real quick before we get too far into it. So because I'm not a Wiccan, I can't 100% speak to everything as best as I possibly could. I do my research and try my best. So please forgive me if I get anything wrong. But Wicca is a religion. It's a neo-pagan nature-based religion that was established as a religion in like the 40s or 50s. A lot of the ideas come from a pre-Christian pagan belief, but the actual Wicca itself as a religion didn't come into view until the 40s or 50s. Witchcraft is not Wicca because you can be a witch and not have a religion or have a different religious background, whether that's Buddhism or Christianity or Catholicism. You can be of a faith and still be a witch. And the only thing that makes you a witch is literally practicing witchcraft. That could be divination. That could be, you know, casting spells. Anything that constitutes as witch, that's it. So with that being said, this movie it's all about witches, but specifically it is very, very, very Wiccan in what it kind of is inspired by. And the person who was the witch consultant, Pat Devon, is a Wiccan, a part of the Covenant of the Goddess at the time that this was made. So essentially, the director Andrew Fleming with screenplay writers Peter Flaherty and Andrew Fleming as well, they wrote this story and had a lot of research done about witchcraft and paganism and what that meant and what it didn't mean, which is why they do a beautiful job not equating it to Satan or Satanism at all, because that isn't what it is. And this Wiccan consultant, Pat Devon, she came in and they already got a lot of it down. And there were some things that she suggested be changed, but they pretty much got it. So one thing that we see in this story that is very much a Wiccan thing is this, they have a belief system called the Wiccan Reed. I'm not going to read it all off, but essentially one of the beliefs is the threefold law. Whatever you send out, you get back times three. Lirio literally tells the girls, she says, true magic is neither black nor white. It's both, because nature is both loving and cruel all at the same time. The only good or bad is in the heart of the witch. Life keeps a balance of its own, you understand? And Rochelle says, not really. So Lirio says, then understand this, whatever you send out, you get back times three. And then she compares it to how many different faiths have the do unto others as you would do unto you. So it's really cool because they take these ideas in a way that's really fun for the story and doesn't feel preachy, but as a witch and as a practitioner, you can watch it and be like, oh my God, this totally is on point. And Fleming was actually quoted as saying, Andrew Fleming, he said, quote, I wanted Wiccans to see it and say, yeah, that's not offensive to me. That's what it's like. And there are so many witches in all different witchcraft communities, both Wiccan and other forms of witchcraft, who claim that this movie either was the inspiration that got them into witchcraft or is one of their favorite films, because it does it shows witchcraft in a way that isn't offensive but is still fun and still has this really wild Hollywood twist that isn't so in your face ridiculous, and it's not satanic, and it's not any of these horrible, like, terrible things that usually witches get stereotyped as. It's just like this great coming of age story of these girls taking their power back, having a power fantasy, and then having that go too far and having to learn a hard lesson.
I'm like glad to hear that it is so like good, because it feels good to watch, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I was like most excited about for this episode, was I wanted to hear all of your takes about the witchcraft and like the performance of magic in this movie. We did on my podcast, Swim Fans, last Halloween, we did a movie called A Dark Song. Have you heard of it?
I've not.
Okay. I think it's Welsh, and I think it came out in 2016 or 2018 or something, but it's about this woman who kind of like against all advice takes on this really complicated, this has nothing to do with witchcraft really, it's a really complicated right-hand path, like magic ritual. So it's just like an hour and a half of this woman, like, you know, doing these really grueling, like secret school things where she has to, like, you know, I don't know, draw circles for like hours. And like, she can only sit in like this one, like one part of the room. And of course, what I'm getting at is like, this whole movie is just like this depiction of ritual magic in a way that I hadn't seen it before. And it like looks really satisfying. And I feel the same way about witchcraft in The Craft, is that like, it looks like it feels like tactile, and it feels, and like you said, it's like fun to watch. I think it's satisfying to watch. And I feel like that's kind of something you don't get to see on screen that often. You know, you don't really get to see like the bits and pieces of like a sort of like witchcraft practice. And it's definitely probably the crown gem of the movie.
For sure. It's the most honest, true telling of what witchcraft is actually like, with the fun bits of Hollywood, you know, magic in there. Like when they do the glamour magic and she changes her hair to be blonde and her eyes to be brown instead of blue. And in what's actual like glamour magic that witches would do today, they would do something more like, you know, I'm going to enchant my lipstick, put energy into that, and wear this lipstick so that whoever hears me speak thinks that I have the most lovely voice. And it's kind of like that illusion magic. So they do a fun job of translating the spell to the Hollywood version of it in a way that's so much fun. And like I said, as a kid, I didn't get any of that. I was just like, wow, this is like, I want to be these teens. I want to go to sleepovers and make my friends levitate and change my hair colors. And as an adult, I'm still sitting here being like, I want to do those things because I practice those things. Like, where can I get witch girlfriends where we can do this? Like, this is great. Forget painting nails. I'm going to change hair colors and eye color without anything but magic. I love it. So as a matter of fact, the witchcraft consultant, Pat Devin, made a point to get all the rituals and all of those practices as on point as possible without it being too perfectly imitatable, where like they were genuinely concerned that it was like, okay, this movie was intended for teens. And so they were like, okay, well, we're not going to use any real deity names. Right. And we're not going to, you know, I'll write up my own made up ritual chants for the film, because I don't want anybody to go out there and, like, you know, invoke, you know, God forbid, invoke Hecate or, you know, Hades or somebody and just have that completely go awry, because these are actual deities that people believe in. And they were like, I don't want anybody to dabble in this so far. And it was so convincing that people actually thought Manon was a real deity. And people have said, oh, it's this, you know, Welsh, I think it's Welsh or Gaelic deity, and it sounds like the same name. But when they chose the name and when they were coming up with that whole idea of deity, they were like, no, 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 we can't have this be similar to anything. We don't want anybody to summon anything.
Yeah. No, I absolutely had to Google it. I'm like, is that a real guy? because I had the same question. Like, I'm like, are kids out here doing witchcraft? under this deity's name. Yeah, so I didn't even know he was fake.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of the terms that they use are very much real. They say blessed be, which is a Wiccan thing. A lot of witches will use it even if they're not Wiccan. So blessed be, binding spell is absolutely, that is a real spell, like that she takes the ribbon and binds the photo. That's 100% a real thing that you can do. Casting a circle, saying perfect love and perfect trust, as above, so below. The altar having a pentacle, using a goblet, you know, representing and calling the different elements, the watchtowers of the different directions, which all have an elemental correspondence. That's all 100%. Yes, absolutely. That is what you do in a lot of witchcraft, not every, but in the wider scope of witchcraft, especially Wiccan beliefs, that is what you do. So it's really interesting to see that you could totally take a lot of those things in that movie and run with it and make your own thing with it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's, I don't know, it's just really cool.
So I wanted to ask you, was there a specific character that you were really drawn to or related to, or that you felt really bad for, just like, other than, I know we talked a lot about Nancy and her actress, but actress aside, just like, as far as like their backstory goes and what they're going through.
I guess personally, maybe the worst is for Bonnie, Neve Campbell's character. Like, she's got unspecified like scar tissue from, I think, like a car accident or something. The movie doesn't really go into it. And so like, she lives like, I mean, she treats herself like a goblin, right? But it's like, it's Neve Campbell, so she's gorgeous. But I guess I feel sympathetic for her because, you know, she spends the movie, up until the magic kind of cures her of the scar tissue, she spends the movie like sort of hiding herself. And like, I think the scene where she gets the like procedure at the hospital, that feels really visceral because there's like the shots of the needle like going into her scar tissue. And it seems like an especially vulnerable moment for that character. But also, like, poor Rochelle, like the blonde woman who's in Dodgeball is like super racist.
Oh my lord.
And, you know, Rochelle and Bonnie are the sweetest characters in the film. So, you know, that's hard to watch. So I guess them, I got to be honest, I don't really feel that much for or about Sarah, probably wisely, but they kind of purposefully keep her like the blankest. So you can kind of like, you can be Sarah. Like, if it's very Bella Swan in Twilight, you can just kind of like slip in, you know, slip into her a little bit. So I don't feel too much for her, but definitely the three other girls.
Yeah, for sure. So listeners, as Josh was saying, we have Rochelle, who is the one black girl in the group, who also seems to be the only black girl, only person of color really in the entire film at the school, who has to deal with racism, specifically the worst from this white blonde girl named Laura. Then we have Bonnie, who was in some sort of accident, who has scars from what seems to be fire all over her back. Nancy, who lives in a trailer park, is poor. Her mother is a alcoholic. Her stepfather seems to sexually harass and assault her, it's implied. And then we have Sarah, whose mother died when she was giving birth to Sarah, and she is depressive and suicidal. And so they all have their own issues. So for me personally, I also feel like Bonnie, I projected a lot on Bonnie when I was a teenager watching this movie, because I had long hair. I was the weird goth girl who stood out. I also did tarot cards and everybody thought I was a devil worshiper and called me a witch. I had a huge issue with my image. It was something I was picked on a lot because I had a lot of acne problems and a lot of scarring. So I was always trying to hide my face. I had a teeth deformity problem. I was like way, 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 way too skinny. I was like skin and bones. So I got made fun of for that. So it was all something that I related to with Bonnie. I was having that image problem, having that like no confidence because of how she looks and thinking of herself as like an ugly monster, when in reality, she's gorgeous. She's beautiful. And the scars aren't what make her. And honestly, Rochelle is the most, in my opinion, and in Rachel True's words, she really was completely undermined as a character. So when Rachel True, who plays Rachel, when she went for the role, Rachel's character was written to be a white girl who was bulimic. That was her problem, was that she had was bulimic. And when Rachel True went for the role of Rachel, they changed the character completely to be a black girl who dealt with racism. And Rachel True has been quoted to say on other podcasts and other interviews that all these girls have this deep, rich, like, backstory that's really, really upsetting, but hers is literally she's black. And it's not Rachel that has the problem. It is everyone has a problem with Rachel. And I thought that was, like, when she said that in one of the interviews I listened to, I was like, oh my God, Rachel is literally the only person who, none of the problems are her fault. It's like everybody is just attacking her because of who she is, because of what she looks like, literally because she's black. And there are also a lot of scenes that were completely cut from the film that were about Rachel. So one of the character issues she was supposed to have was that she was supposed to be a very, very rich girl. Her family was supposed to be wealthy, and that was something that kind of like made her uncomfortable. And there was supposed to be a scene where her parents were there in the background. And apparently the actor and the actress who played those parents would ask Rachel True, like, hey, do you think you can get us some lines? And she's like, no, they're barely giving me any lines. Like, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And then it sucks because their scenes got cut completely. So they didn't even make it into the film. And it's just unfortunate because there's just, you know, Rachel True is just such an amazing actress. And they just kind of threw her character to the side. And they could have done a lot more with her. And while it's great to show that issue of racism, it kind of stinks that it was like, that was her issue. It was like, that was it, period. Like, and it's so sad too, because out of everybody's wish, hers is literally that she just doesn't want to hate others, especially those who hate her. She wants to accept others for who they are. She wants others to accept her for who she is. Whereas other people are like, I want this boy to love me. I want to be pretty. I want to be powerful. She's like, look, I just want to be accepted.
Right. No, I mean, that's, you know, such a, you know, good observation from True herself. Like, I mean, it's painfully apparent while watching the movie that Rachel's house is the only one that they never go inside. You do indeed never see her parents, which is weird because all of the other girls' parents are like, they serve a purpose. We go inside Nancy's trailer a few times. We're with Bonnie's mom, I think 3 or 4 times. Sarah seems to have a plotline that got cut about her stepmom. So they sort of bring that up at the beginning and then drop it entirely.
And then bring it back up at the end as like, oh yeah, your mom was a witch. And it's like, right. Wait, what?
But you know, a lot of the movie takes place inside Sarah's house. So like we get this interiority to those three that, yeah, Rachel just does not get. Yeah, everything you just said about like True's reflections is accurate. Like Rachel's conflict is another girl having beef with her as opposed to something to do with this girl as a person. And it really is a shame, you know, because like when Bonnie like loses like her scars, she sort of becomes like too cool for school, right? Like she finally is like freed herself from shame. But Rachel remains like the nice one. Which could have been interesting if there was like something with Rachel's character like to do with that.
Absolutely. And it's interesting too, because even when they're casting spells again later, because their spells didn't work, what they do for Rachel is they braid Laura's hair into Rachel's hair. And Sarah tells Rachel, like, because Rachel says, what will this do to Laura? And Sarah says, it won't do anything if she doesn't mess with you. And Laura just keeps messing with Rachel, and her baldness and her scalp get worse and worse and worse, to the point where Rachel sees her in the shower room crying and sobbing, and she's asking, what did I do to deserve this? And every time I watch the film, I'm like, girl, if you did not get it through your thick skull, like what you did to anybody at all ever, and you're asking Rachel this question of all people, like you still don't get it. And one scene that was cut, I couldn't find it online, but I know I've seen it before, is there's the part where all the girls go to the party. And at the party, Nancy's already in the bedroom with Chris. Sarah's like, I gotta go stop Nancy. Bonnie and Rochelle are left downstairs, and Laura walks up in a really cheap, cheesy, obvious blonde wig. And she says to Rochelle, oh, hey. And she's like very uncomfortable and awkward. And Rochelle's like, oh my gosh, hi. And Laura's like, oh, can I talk to you real quick? I need to talk to you. And it cuts there. And it's like, what happened? That went nowhere. There's a deleted scene there where she owns up to being a terrible person and apologizing to Rochelle and being like, you didn't deserve any of that. And I'm sorry, I didn't realize that till now. And there, it wasn't a redemption for Laura because she was a bigoted, racist, you know, absolute terrible person to Rochelle. But it was this moment of Rochelle getting that sort of, you know, that moment that she needed of like, your spell, this is what your spell has done. Things have come full circle. And, you know, maybe you shouldn't feel guilty for that because, like, she finally sees what she's been doing and she's not going to mess with you anymore. But they just, like, again, it's just one of those things where they kind of give Rachel True's character, Rochelle, the short end of the stick. It just kind of stinks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to that point, like, because, you know, she has so little to do comparatively, like, her character ends up having kind of, like the least integrity, by which I mean her character, it kind of just does whatever the scene needs it to do. Because after the girls have already like made their wishes, you know, the magic is going out of control, right? So the first people to realize it are Sarah because Chris is like assaulting her, and Rochelle because of the scene you talked about where she finds Laura in the shower crying. And that scene feels very purposeful because Rochelle is horrified. Like, she knows that this is the result of the magic. And so what one would expect is that the sort of domino effect, like Sarah and Rochelle have experienced the, you know, the returning of the proper term for karma in the situation. and so now, you know, it's going to happen to Bonnie and Nancy, and it like sort of does. But then once Rochelle realizes what's happened, she then just like flips again and like isn't horrified anymore because now she and Bonnie have to be on Nancy's side against Sarah. And on this watch through, that was really jarring because like the scene where Laura's hair is falling out it's quite shocking. And you know, Rachel True is really unambiguous in that scene. Like, Rochelle's horrified. Like, this is not what she wants. Like, this isn't what she wanted. She's like a kind-hearted person. Like, even though Laura is, you know, really awful and racist to her, she didn't like this. Like, she didn't want this. You know what I mean? So, it's then weird that because, and I think it's just because she doesn't have that much to do, which, you know, is a big detriment to this movie. They can just switch her back to being a bad guy. And it just feels really weird.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that's one of those moments where it's like, I would not have, you know, batted an eye if the other girls or even just Rochelle alone said, hey, Sarah, I agree. This has gone too far. We have to do something to stop this. Because it does feel like at that point, Nancy's just treating them like lackeys, Bonnie and Rochelle, and they act like lackeys. And it stinks because it's like, oh, man. But I mean, it kind of turns out, even though we have these four main characters, it kind of turns out that we only really have two main characters, which ends up being Nancy and Sarah, which kind of stinks. But for anybody who is curious about Rachel True, since we're talking about Rachel True, Rachel True was already like invested in like tarot and witchcraft and witchy things even before she got called on to be Rochelle for the movie. And Rachel True just recently made her own tarot deck, which you can order online. It's already come out. Rachel True's tarot deck is called True Heart Intuitive Tarot. You can find it through a link on Rachel True's Twitter, which is at Rachel True. So if you're interested, I highly suggest checking it out. And it's very cool because she actually used to work as a tarot reader for a short time in one of the LA shops out here called House of Intuition. And when I was first getting into magic and witchcraft and all that stuff, when I was here in LA, the first like magical shop I ever went to was House of Intuition. And Rachel True was there outside sitting on the patio. And I got to see her and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, that's Rachel True from The Craft.
This is quick. Yeah. So when Nancy's stepfather dies, they get $175,000, which again, not an insignificant chunk of change. Like, it's a lot of money. But they seem to buy what looks like a high-rise apartment in Los Angeles. And I just worry for their budget is all. It's like, because it is a lot of money, but I think it's going to go pretty quick in that kind of apartment.
I had the same thought. I was like, okay, first of all, you bought an apartment? You do realize that's like, you still have to pay on that? Like, it's not like a condo. And then I actually had to look it up. $175,000 in 1996 today would be closer to $305,000. So I'm like, all right, that makes... Because at the time when I watched it as a kid, I was like, wow, that's so much money. And me as an adult struggling with bills and like loans, I'm like, wait a minute. That is not...
again, it's like a ton of money, but like...
In LA?
Right. That's, I think we're just really beaten down by this city. Yes. Well, I'm like, that's not even that much money. Like, I'm like,
yes.
You know, I have like a fistful of potato chips cramming them into my mouth. And I'm like, it's not even that much money.
And how are they going to maintain after? Like,
yes.
What? I'm glad I wasn't the only one who thought that. I literally wrote that down. I was like, wait, an apartment?
Yeah, that was like my only brain worm where I couldn't let it go for a minute.
I swear every movie that we watch together, one of us has that like, wait, I can't let this go. This is an issue. And it's really not.
Most movies, really. It's more of a me problem than most movie problems.
So one of the other things I wanted to bring up was the costume design in this movie is actually very fantastic with telling visual story. And so, you know, at the beginning of the film, Sarah doesn't have her uniform for the Catholic school yet, and all the other girls are wearing kind of like their uniform, but they've adorned it in some way that's unique to them. So, for example, Bonnie, because she's uncomfortable with her body, she wears leggings and a big baggy, either a sweatshirt, a hoodie, or some sort of jacket of some kind. And, you know, Nancy has, you know, some bracelets and stuff, but she's still wearing the uniform. And Sarah tends to wear like brighter, lighter blue colors. But as they grow in power, Rachel True has actually said this, that as their powers grow, their skirts get shorter.
Yes.
Which is absolutely true. But it's also interesting because they all start to go from any kind of color that any of them had, just goes straight to black and white. Their outfits get a lot more confident, a lot more refined, not sloppy, but like it's very goth, punk rock, and very trendy, but very still very tidy and clean. And one of the really cool things that I sincerely appreciated, which I know it's a very small thing, is Nancy wears a rosary. Now, I was raised Catholic, and rosaries, the biggest no-no, I don't know about today, I don't know anymore if you're Catholic and you know, like, feel free to let me know. But when I was growing up and I went to Catholic after school mass and everything, I was always taught that wearing a rosary is a huge, huge no-no. It's a sacred object. It's not meant to be worn. It's something that you hold, you cherish, you pray with, you use in very, you know, specific ritual ceremony, you know, in church or at home or as an adornment, but you do not actually adorn yourself with it. It's seen as extremely disrespectful. And Nancy is here going to this Catholic school wearing a rosary like a necklace. And I just thought that was a brilliant little cherry on top for that costume design, because she doesn't start wearing that rosary until she gets like really confident and cocky with her own power. And that says a lot of just like completely throwing away any kind of like this ritual or tradition, not only metaphorically as like, if you want to say, oh, like, you know, God versus the devil. No. Speaking beyond that, because when she is first shown at the beginning of the film, she's talking about Manon and this spiritual belief that she has and how beautiful it is. But by the end of the film, she's literally abusing her power and throwing away any kind of ritual, any kind of like deity, divine beauty that she had at the beginning is like gone. And so I always thought that symbolism of her wearing that rosary was a nice example of like, she does not care about the tradition, the ritual, or the divine anymore. She's just like, I am divine. I can wear this because I am God. And I was like, oh, that's so smart. I'm probably reading way too much into that, but I love it.
Well, and also it looks cool as hell.
Absolutely, it does. I mean, if I wasn't afraid of like offending people, I would definitely do it because it looks cool as hell.
I had one tiny note about Nancy's locker noose that only shows up in one shot, but I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Josh, that's literally the first note that I have written down is LOL Nancy's black locker noose.
If I had a black noose, okay, I would have put it in my locker as well.
Oh, yes. See, this is why you're on the podcast to talk about this movie. You notice the small, wonderful details like me.
Yeah, it's such a vibe. It really is.
It really is a very specific aesthetic. Well, I know I could just blabber on and on and on about this movie. And honestly, I could do a whole other part two about this movie with you. But we got to cut it short eventually. We got to end it and wrap it up. And this was just so much fun getting to hear your perspective on this wonderful movie, both the pros and the cons. And thank you so much, Josh, for coming back on to chat with me about this.
Yeah, thanks again for having me back, especially for such a home run.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure chatting with you about The Craft. And of course, like always, for our wonderful listeners, where can they find you?
You can find me doing bad posts at user Amons, AMONS. And if you are a fan of such good podcasts such as A Jaunty Haunt, me and a couple good pals do a podcast called Swim Fans, which was an erotic thriller podcast, is now a teen movie podcast, but will soon become an erotic thriller podcast yet again. General purpose genre film podcast. I mean, yeah, please check us out if you're so inclined. We're on Twitter at @userswimfanspod.
Well, thank you so much again, Josh. This was an absolute magical time.
Thank you.
That's it for this thrilling, chilling episode of A Jaunty Haunt. If you would like to submit a ghost story, send an email to ajauntyhauntpodcast@gmail.com for a chance of having it read on the show. Or you can follow A Jaunty Haunt on Twitter for the latest updates on the podcast. For all things witchy, follow me on Instagram at Eidolon's Kingdom. That's EIDOLONS_KINGDOM, where you can also find a link in my bio for tarot readings and other witchy services. You can check out my art on Instagram at Eidolon Knight for art and more. That's EIDOLON_NIGHT. Huge thank you to Bree Paulson for creating the theme for Jaunty Haunt. Beware and take care.